So I'm going to start. Ron, Karen, and whoever else is involved in organizing this seminar, thank you very much for inviting me to participate. It's been a great addition to our division to have this seminar. I'm going to talk today in the context of a discussion about comparative effectiveness about an evaluation that I've been involved in now for the last several months. And this is an evaluation of a demonstration being conducted by CMS. And this is the evaluation of Medicare imaging demonstration is often known as the MID or Medicare imaging demonstration. And I'm the PI along with my colleague Peter Hussey for the EMID, which is the evaluation of MID. And so I have as the subtitle here the approach to the evaluation because, as I said, this is a CMS-funded activity, and we'll talk about how it came to be in a bit. But for those of you who have worked at all with CMS, these are very large, complex projects, and getting them off the ground often takes some time. And so we're in the approach phase, and each day our approach becomes more and more, I would say, enriched and complex and interesting, but it seems like that doesn't mean we're getting closer to launch. It means sometimes that we're just still approaching, but actually I think that's appropriate because these are very complex demos and evaluations. So this is my team. I'm working with Peter Hussey and Justin Timby, John Adams, Ashton Rastigar, Neil Wenger, Rans SRG, Barb Wynn, and Lisa Hackett. So I wanted to start with a picture because throughout this talk I'll be referring to ADI, which is the phrase for advanced diagnostic imaging. And specifically in this context, it refers to CAT scans, MRIs, and SPECT MPIs. And so you see pictures of the CT and the MRI equipment, and then you see pictures here of the cardiac study, the CAT scan, and the MRI. And what's unique about these is that they're all very expensive. They have had an extraordinary growth in the utilization of these procedures in recent years. And I'm going to talk about that a little bit as a context for why this whole evaluation got going. So ADIs, or advanced diagnostic imaging, has been a key driver of medical spending in the last decade. And lots of things, almost everything we touch in medicine has been a key driver of medical spending in the last decade. But this really has outdone all of the other interventions that have been going on. So from 2000 through 2006, Medicare expenditures for CAT scans, MRIs, and nuclear medicine increased from almost doubling from 3.6 to $7.6 billion, 17% increase per year, with the growth rate being more rapid than any other service for which physicians billed Medicare during this time. Also of note is that the United States has almost twice as many MRI units per million persons as any other industrialized country, with the number of MRI studies per 1,000 Medicare beneficiaries increased from almost none in 1985 to 50 in 1995, and then more than tripled to 173 by 2005 per 1,000 Medicare beneficiaries. And while there's been an increase in the use of advanced diagnostic imaging, may improve outcomes and so offset other medical expenses, in reality, there's really very little published evidence to support that. Yes?
Is that mostly growth in use or also cost?
No, it's actually a big increase in use, and we'll talk a little bit more about where this comes from. So this is from Englehart in the New England Journal in 2009, and the cumulative changes in the y-axis and time is in the x-axis. And what this is showing is this is what's happened in terms of change in use rates for evaluation and management services for major procedures, for physician services, for other procedures, diagnostic tests, and here's what's happened for imaging, just as a way of showing how costs have been going up and use has been going up throughout the whole healthcare delivery system. But imaging, and in particular, it's this advanced diagnostic imaging that has been going up like crazy. And that is why patients, physicians, and payers have all been paying attention to this topic. So this slide from one of the radiology journals, again, has on the x-axis time and use on the y-axis. And this is showing each line here represents a different geographic area. This is the mean across all geographic areas. And it shows in all of these different geographic areas a pretty similar slope. What you see is Seattle is at the bottom, and Atlanta and Boston and Chicago are at the top, but they're all going up big time in terms of use rates. And this is the geographic variation slide, which is showing the utilization rate per capita of non-invasive diagnostic imaging in Medicare populations in 2007. And what you're seeing here is that, as I showed on a prior slide, Seattle has a lower rate of use, whereas in the classic areas for higher use, Boston, it's 4.28. And also the South is very high here. So some of these slides, especially in the beginning, because of the way the literature is set up, look at imaging, but it's really about advanced diagnostic imaging is the piece that's really changed so much over time.
Is it known how that breaks down by imaging type? So whether areas that are lower in certain imaging, or altogether, like Seattle 2.99, whether that's consistent across CT, MRI?
Well, the big issue is that the one that's really gone crazy, like a 30-fold increase, is within cardiology. Mm-hmm. And they have their own set of SPECT-associated studies that can be CT, MRI, or PET, depending on the geographic area. But within cardiology, that's where the rates have increased the most. But it's pretty much increased throughout the different specialty types. So the next two slides are addressing why we have this increase over time, what's been going on. I mean, one thing is we have this new technology. And so I think the first slide, the first bullet here differs from all the subsequent bullets. The first bullet says that there's, when we talk about why this increase in advanced diagnostic imaging use, the first piece is that there's a positive effect on patient outcomes. That is, there's this evidence that we can see more and know more as a result of these advanced imaging studies. But there's really not been a lot of studies showing that outcomes have changed. There's been a few studies that show rates of surgery decrease as a result of using, for example, a CT in the setting of a question of appendicitis. But there hasn't been extensive outcome studies. And in fact, there's been a substantial incorporation of imaging into clinical practice, but without a systematic, rigorous assessment of outcomes. Defensive medicine has been contributing to increased use of imaging, and there's one study that says that about 18 to 20% of the advanced diagnostic imaging is performed to support defensive medicine. There's been this weak evidence base with lack of knowledge about imaging and appropriateness. An important issue is that advanced diagnostic imaging is expensive the equipment is expensive to purchase, and so it tends to be purchased by academic medical centers. That's where training occurs, and so young docs, young radiologists, and often young clinicians learn to rely during their training on this very costly information, these costly procedures. And then when they're finished with their training, they don't really know how to practice medicine independent of these costly procedures. And so when they're finished with their training, they'll go out and they will seek practice settings in which these expensive machines are available. And then the other really big point here is that there's been the purchase of these, an investment in these machinery by many, many physicians, and then these physicians will self-refer to these procedures. And so there's self-referral by physicians to self-owned and in self-invested equipment. And this, of course, raises the question about conflict of interest. It also, people have raised the question that it lowers patient motivation for second opinions. And at the same time, there's been a move towards direct to consumer marketing, both for providers and for patients, which is another reason for increasing advanced diagnostic imaging use. So this has been becoming a mainstay of clinical practice. Structural changes associated with advanced diagnostic imaging are becoming a significant source of physicians' income, and this gets to your point, Jonas. There's an increased number of practices with advanced diagnostic imaging. There's more and more of these machines or units within a practice. They're able to do more and more studies. They're becoming more decentralized. There's mobile imaging units, and there's lots and lots of this self-referral. You know, that there's that Stark ruling where there's a limitation so that physicians can't order from their own laboratory. But because there were concerns about access to patients for advanced diagnostic imaging in the ambulatory setting, Congress wanted to avoid a problem with access, so there's an exemption to the Stark ruling for advanced diagnostic imaging in the ambulatory setting. And that's kind of causes one of the things that's fueled this whole big problem. I had to go over two slides to show all the different things that have contributed to this problem.
I had heard that, but what was the kind of political motivation behind? I mean, what was the evidence that there was going to be an access problem, I guess, in the first place that led them to make that
exception? Yeah, that's a great question. I think that in order to know whether there is an access problem, you need to know whether the use of the service actually improves outcomes. And since that's not known, it's kind of hard to answer.
That's an across the board example?
Yeah. It's not for ambulatory setting.
But all imaging nationwide.
Advanced diagnostic, yes, not regional or state level. It's national, yeah. So the other point I wanted to make, and I think one of you asked this question, is that advanced diagnostic imaging ordering is not limited to one specialty type. It's really spanning the specialty types. The average PCP orders 5 to 10 of these advanced images, MRIs, CT per month. Cardiologists are just, in many offices, they can't function without ordering these by the hour. And the other point here that I want to put down is this broad listing of specialists ranging from cancer docs to neurologists, neurosurgeons, ortho, GI, ER docs, hospitalists, they all own their own practices, their own imaging equipment. And that's something really new because it used to be that these were owned by radiologists. But now they're owned by these clinicians who self-refer. And then, so those are the reasons that the rates have increased, but there are some potential harms. There's, of course, the associated healthcare costs, although I did mention on a prior slide it's possible that use of this imaging could reduce costs if, in fact, for example, unnecessary surgery were aborted or more efficient care resulted as a result of this, but those outcomes haven't really been documented. One is increased health costs. Second is that downstream tests and procedures that have little value or are harmful and that result from misdiagnosis, this is the false positive, can come as a result of these tests because they're very, very sensitive and we still haven't figured out exactly how to approach the many, many incidentalomas that are found with these studies. And then this very big issue, which has been known for a long time, but is becoming more and more in public awareness, and that's the topic of radiation exposure. There's this well-known article in 2007 from Brenner in the New England Journal, which said that extrapolated cancer rates due to CT imaging account for 2% of all cancers in the United States. And I remember for many years, one of our colleagues had a kid who had was born with a congenital abdominal problem. And every time the kid, starting from infancy to adolescence, had a bellyache, often it would become severe very quickly, and there was no way at home to figure out what was going on, so the kid often would have to go to the ER. And unfortunately, each time, this resulted in imaging, time after time after time, and you know, nobody was really keeping track of the radiation exposure. And, you know, I think that's just a little story that tells that people haven't really been paying too much attention to this whole radiation exposure. And so I did put this little sub-bullet here, which is, and we're going to talk in a minute about decision support, but the decision support as a way to address this topic actually has the opportunity to document when orders are made, what the radiation exposure would be in association with this or that type of radiation image, and with this or that type of image. So that actually might be a cool advantage. Okay, so the federal government and other payers have been concerned about this problem, and a variety of policies have been recommended to address this. And many of these policies have been implemented in the non-Medicare setting. Some of these have been implemented in the Medicare setting, and none of them have really worked, which prompted the demonstration that we're evaluating. But the ones that are considered is and have been tried are prior authorization. Many of you probably heard about these. They're often referred to as the RBMs, or radiology benefit managers. These are very prevalent in the private sector. Medicare payment policy. And of note for these RBMs, there's a lot of controversy about how well the studies about effectiveness of RBMs, how well those studies have been conducted. But they do seem to find about 23% of ordered advanced imaging has been reported as inappropriate from the RBMs. But of course, they make their living by showing inappropriateness. That's a little hard to sort out. Yeah.
I'm not sure, but is there some sort of certificate of need regulation also in a state? Some states, do they regulate the number of advanced kind of in the way that they regulate cabbage and...
You know, I haven't come across that.
I'm only about
8 months, or 6 or 8 months into working on this,
yeah.
And there's a lot of things I've had to learn. I haven't come across
that. I just thought about this, and maybe that's why some states have lower. I think there might be some.
It's a good point. I'll try to look at
it. It used to be at federal level, actually.
Well, yeah, and then it was delegated to the states, and some states kept it, and some didn't.
Yeah.
And I know for sure about the cardiological, you know, advanced technologies, but I'm not sure about EMR. I thought there might be something, some states might have, but I'm not sure.
So Medicare tried to cap payments, but it didn't really reduce the trend. Another possibility is to, this may be promising, is to increase the extent of Medicare payment system bundling of services to decrease incentives for higher volume. Pay for performance could include incentives for appropriate utilization of imaging services, and decision support, either with or without prior authorization, could be used. And with decision support, I think the idea here is that organization and social issues related to workflow could be incorporated into the whole process for ordering. And that could be tied to using guidelines to translate to information technology systems using a centralized guideline system. So I think that's the hope here. So I'm now introducing DSS, Decision Support, and I'm glad Doug is here because he has lots of expertise in this. So the hope here is that Decision Support could provide information on appropriateness of the ordering of these tests in real time when tests are being ordered so that physicians could do a better job with their ordering. So decision support is hoped would provide physicians and patients information on treatment appropriateness actually during the encounters. The decision support tools could synthesize existing evidence on procedure effectiveness right at the point of care when the tests are being ordered. And one of the unique features of DSS is that it could help physicians to incorporate patients' individual characteristics. And that's a little different than just using guidelines that are out there, because then if you're trying to fit it all into guidelines without having some kind of more refined decision support system, you can't necessarily individualize it to the particular patient that you're looking at. So I wanted to address the subject of the not just this whole issue as a policy issue and one concerning because of increasing cost and increasing radiation exposure, but why I was interested in this, why Neil Wenger, my colleague, was interested in this, and also why a lot of clinicians are interested. And you know, there's been so much new technology that it really is very difficult for us when we have a patient at the bedside to know which is the best test. And these tests change very rapidly, and the guidelines or the recommendations for which one is the best test changes. And you know, I think it was about 3 or 4 years ago that I realized, when I was even trying to figure out for my patients with uncontrolled hypertension when to evaluate or how to evaluate renal artery stenosis, it's like every 3 months the recommended test changes. And you know, it used to be like that for a few tests, VO, you know, renal artery stenosis, but it's like that for many, many clinical conditions now. And my title here, as you see, has to do with PCPs. And for those of us who are PCPs, we like to be smart, we like to do a good job, but we don't really see these patients that often with these kinds of problems, and so it's really difficult to kind of stay on top of it. And so using clinical decision support, especially when embedded within order entry systems, especially within an EHR, can increase the physician's selection of whether or not to order an advanced diagnostic imaging. And if one were to order it, then to get the right test. So I think that's a hope for PCP or for anybody. A second bullet here I pulled out related to PCPs is, this might be right or it might not be right, but the one study on this that I came across shows that a retrospective medical record reviews show that a quarter of non-urgent ambulatory diagnostic imaging tests ordered by PCPs in a university setting were unnecessary. And I'm just not comfortable with my colleagues and I being labeled like that. I want to do something so we do better. You know, because it's a system issue if we're not doing better. And so it'd be great if we could try to address that. And then the other issue is, at least my own belief, and I think that of a lot of others, is that we're going to be pooling resources more and more. And, you know, these small offices are going to be glued together, and there's going to be the development of these accountable care organizations. And that with accountable care organizations, the provision of DSS for physicians and hospitals is a lot more efficient and provider-friendly, provider-supportive, because we learn something from it, as compared with the third-party call where we're waiting on the line and someone says, sorry, inappropriate, and you're done, and you don't really learn anything from it. Yes?
And the second one, the second bullet, was that something you can anticipate, or just knowing after the fact that was unnecessary?
Yeah, no, I mean, I think, I'm really compulsive. I try to check on everything. I can't keep track of it. You know, I think they change the rules. They don't tell us. Yeah, it's tough to keep track of it. So.
But I mean, that's a review, right? So in the review, did they say that now we know it's unnecessary, but you couldn't necessarily tell in advance if you're a provider?
Well, I think it depends on, you don't need decision support systems to align radiology and appropriateness and clinical practice, but it's just DSS is an efficient, or maybe an efficient tool for aligning those things. So if I understand your question.
No, I'm just saying, because you always hear about unnecessary medicine, and I'm just trying to figure out how much could you really as a provider know going in, or is it just because you don't know the result, and after the fact you could say it's unnecessary.
Oh, you mean the results of the patient's study?
You're talking about the second bullet
point. The second bullet point, yeah.
Yeah, but are you talking about the results of the patient's study?
No. I think what he was saying is that, you know, you have a patient, you go in with an idea of what the diagnosis might be, you do in good faith a test, then later on the test in retrospect might be deemed as unnecessary.
Yeah.
But
how did they define it?
This isn't considered inappropriate in relation to the clinical results of the study or the imaging results. It's based on guideline criteria for when you should or shouldn't use it.
Okay.
So we're moving towards DSS. And we're going to evaluate it. So the challenges to DSS implementation are that most DSS trials have actually resulted in improvements in patient care, but the adoption has been limited, mostly in small number of academic medical centers and in systems of integrated systems of care. Wider adoption has been slowed by social and technical barriers, limited understanding of organizational and social issues related to DSS. Challenges incorporating DSS into clinical workflow have been noted, and in fact, typically when DSS is implemented, it's associated with inefficiencies, at least for some period of time, that then have to be overcome before advantages might be noted. Difficulty developing clinical practice guidelines has been an issue, because for this kind of decision support to work, you need to have an agreed upon set of clinical information you want to share. And often specialty societies or various developers of guidelines disagree, and there has to be some kind of recommendation about what to do that has to be used. There's typically been an absence of a central repository for computable guidelines where they can be shared and stored, and poor support for DSS and commercially available electronic health record systems. So happily, HITECH is establishing an incentive program or has that will help may help DSS adoption and help to evaluate it. And I just wanted to go over. There's this great idea that maybe DSS will work, but there still will be challenges, what I'm trying to say here. So in the context of all of this, remember what I've gone over up till now is introduction of new technology, major uptake, faster than any other increase in rate of use of services in the United States. Maybe some good associated with that, probably, but we don't really have good outcome data to date. And so, and a number of policy interventions have been tried to slow the rate of use, but in large part because of this ownership issue where clinicians can own these services, the rate of use has gone crazy. And so the federal government for Medicare patients stepped in 2008 with Section 135B of the Medicare Improvement Patients and Provider Act, and the Secretary of HHS and mandated that HHS shall conduct a demonstration project to collect data regarding physician compliance with appropriateness criteria in order to determine the appropriateness of advanced diagnostic imaging services furnished to Medicare beneficiaries. So I was pretty excited about the opportunity to evaluate this, because it's a major clinical problem, it's a major technology problem, it's definitely related to the kind of clinical practice interface between efficiency and quality and clinical work that I'm interested in. It just raised a lot of very interesting research and clinical issues. Pardon me?
What are advanced diagnostic imaging services?
Yeah. Because
everything's siloed.
Yeah. So for purposes of the demonstration, and many people will think of it as CT, MRI, and the cardiology procedures, which include CT, MRI, or PET, but for purposes of understanding coronary anatomy and LV function.
That includes echocardiogram?
At least not in terms of, I'm going to show you the procedures that are associated specifically with this demonstration and evaluation. There are 11. People have little different definitions, but typically echocardiogram is not included.
Yeah. And stress tests?
Stress tests are included.
So why would they?
CT, MRI, and nuclear medicine.
Yeah.
That's probably
but
the
that doesn't said. Make it. This is what I would question, because each specialty tries to grab procedures for itself, and just because it falls into one department does not necessarily, it always falls into one department that delivers a particular service.
So I agree with you, a great point, and this demonstration actually has selected 11 procedures, but it's not pulling out all nuclear medicine, all CT, or all MRI. It's got specific procedures, and there are specific criteria for it, and I'll show you what they are. So I just wanted to say that the statute instructs HHS to collect data to determine the appropriateness of services in relation to established criteria and provide participating physicians with feedback reports that allow assessment of appropriateness. And that the design is expected to allow appropriateness evaluation or to look to see whether DSS changes appropriateness rates across geographic areas, specialties, and practice settings. And this is only focused, of course, within Medicare, because Medicare is funding this. So MID, again, is the Medicare Imaging Demonstration, and there's a couple of design slides. So this is a large-scale deployment of DSS to provide insights into challenges and opportunities in clinical areas identified with high rates of inappropriate use. It involves about 5,000 physicians. It's a two-year demonstration, uses National Specialty Society guidelines to determine appropriateness of advanced diagnostic imaging. And once a practice is pulled in as one, a member of the demo, all physicians associated with that practice who are involved in caring for Medicare or delivering Medicare services are involved. And 11 advanced diagnostic imaging services are included, and they're listed here. It's CT or MRI of the brain, CT of the sinus, CT of the abdomen or pelvis or thorax, CT of the lumbar spine, and then the MRI listing is here, brain, lumbar spine, knee, shoulder, and then this cardiology set.
And it's like contrast and non-contrast?
Contrast and or non-contrast. So the criteria for procedure selection, and actually the procedure selection was done by Lewin. They're the demo people and the evaluation people. Is prevalent or high rate of growth covered by appropriate criteria associated with a medical specialty society and evidence for variation in utilization or appropriateness. So that's how these procedures were selected, and then another topic is how the guidelines were selected. I'll get to that in a minute. So the second design slide here is that the decision support at the time of ordering, when we get to that, will assign categories of no guideline relevant to support appropriateness assignment or appropriate, uncertain, and inappropriate. The physicians retain autonomy to order the advanced diagnostic imaging without pre-authorization, and that was part of the statute, is that pre-authorization was not allowed. All the physicians are assured that they will get payment for all the tests that they order during the entire two-year demonstration, and the amount of payment they get is tied to the amount of ordering their organization did in the year prior to the demonstration, because they didn't want this evaluation to be about payment. So physicians will receive periodic feedback that shows their appropriateness ratings compared to practice benchmarks. And EMID, so now I'm changing from MID, Medicare Imaging Demonstration, to EMID, which is the evaluation of Medicare Imaging Demonstration, provides for the evaluation of the effects of implementing DSS and feedback reports to MDs for the advanced diagnostic imaging. So how does this all work the way it is expected to work? And we've been going through some pilot testing and practicing and looking to see all of this. See if I can wait. So the idea is that the physician, this is the 5,000 or so physicians who are involved in one of the demonstration sites, would log into the system to access patient identifying data. The physician orders advanced diagnostic imaging associated with one of the 11 studies that I showed you. The physician provides relevant clinical information, and the amount of clinical information that they would provide is prompted by guidelines and also prompted by whatever that doctor's office's decision support system looks like, because there's a couple of varieties of them. There's not one being implemented around the country, and I'll talk more about that in a minute. Yes, Ron?
So they know at this point that it's one of the 11 groupings and that they're planning to order the imaging. Is that what you're saying?
It's not a secret.
No, but I mean that to get to that point, they're actually already deciding they're going to order it, and they're doing it before they're getting any feedback, right?
I'll talk about feedback
is
in a minute,
sequence,
but they order, if they think they're going to order one of the 11, then by Medicare rulings, if they're in the demo, they have to go and enter data using this DSS system. So if they're ordering a chest x-ray, which isn't one of the 11, they can use it, they can order using paper or however they normally, EHR, however they normally do it. But only if they're thinking about ordering one of the 11 do they need to use the decision support system. And in different systems, they may be ordering everything electronically or everything using decision support, but at the very least, when they're poaching these 11, they have to, if they're part of the demo.
Yeah, I'm just trying to make sure the sequence, though, that they're planning to do that, then it's going to start giving them feedback maybe if it's not appropriate, right? Versus just kind of entering in the patient information and then it kind of says up front before you even decide. So they've kind of already made a tentative decision to do it here.
Kind of.
At least to make the time investment, the
yeah.
The system, I suppose.
Mm-hmm. But, well, maybe I'll just stop here and say there's five what's called conveners involved across these 5,000 or 5,800 physicians. And a convener is defined, actually Cedars-Sinai, for example, is competing to be, and their whole system is competing to be a convener, but I guess I don't know why they didn't get funded. These five conveners around the country, or many conveners around the country, I think there are 34 of them or whatever, applied to be conveners. And these were organizations that glued together practices that agreed that they would follow the demonstration rules. They were evaluated by CMS and Lewin for whether they met the appropriate criteria. So they basically had to have enough docs, enough imaging, variety of imaging. Imaging had to be distributed across a couple of different specialty types, especially involving primary care. They were trying to get variety in systems of care. And what's important here, and kind of ties into Ron's line of queries, is that the convener is kind of defined by or related to the DSS system. So each convener, there's five that were funded, they have their own, each one has their own DSS system. And that DSS system is distributed across the different practices associated with the demo docs or the demo offices. And so, from an evaluation point of view, this is a major nightmare, as you can imagine, because what's good is that there's five different systems, so you can kind of test, maybe one system's bad, maybe they would have implemented only one system and it wasn't working well, and maybe there could be a perfect system, but it wouldn't work well in this setting, it only works well in that setting. So I think there's a lot of advantages, maybe politically from CMS's perspective, but actually practically for an evaluation to have some variety in these DSS systems. But, you know, it's also pretty tricky, I think, when it comes to the evaluation to deal with that. And so in some of the conveners, like one of them is basically a radiology benefits manager that's converting into DSS. And they have practices all over. And their kind of base case is the RBM system, and they're just like adding a DSS on top of it or the guidelines on top of it, but they have their basic infrastructure. At the other end of the spectrum is the Brigham and Women's radiology system, which is actually linked to University of Pennsylvania and Geisinger and NYU. No, I forget, one of the New York hospitals, I forget which one. Not just hospital, but their system, their ambulatory system. So there's a huge variability even across the five. Another one is Maine, and in Maine they're linking together a large number of ambulatory small practices. So they really did a nice job getting variability. And so back to Ron's point, in some of them, it's more, like in the Brigham and Women's in particular, you just log in and everything's automated. I mean, they're 5 years ahead of everybody else. But in others, only if you're logging in to potentially order one of these 11 would you go through the DSS system.
So is the DSS system a separate software that's separate from their EHR?
Well, they don't all have EHRs.
Yeah,
in fact,
like
other than Brigham and Women's, they mostly don't, on Geisinger.
So is it known how long it's going to take for this? Because sometimes physicians
you mean minutes?
Take that, yeah, because I mean sometimes folks take the easiest route, you know, so images are ordered at times because
yeah.
A patient places pressure and the physician thinks it's going to take less time to just order the test
yeah.
than to do it.
So
once
a practice is signed up with a convener to participate in this, their payment for Medicare imaging is tied to participation and data collection. So I think what you're saying is the docs will just skip out and not do it. That won't happen because it's incentivized so that they really will give us complete data.
No, what I'm saying is that they may order fewer tests altogether because they have a patient, let's say, who comes in and says, I want a CT of my chest because I have a cough. And right now, they may, you know, before they participate in this, they may say, sure, all I have to do is write the word, it takes me 10 seconds, I'm done. But once they participate in this, then maybe it takes them 5 minutes, and they think, in 3 minutes, I could explain to the patient why not to do it, and this may take five.
Well, you know, maybe, I think that's one of the things that's being tested, and it's being tested across these different systems, and it's also being tested across, there's number one, different systems, and then there's the kind of context system interaction.
Right.
So the perfect system might not work in setting A, but it might work in setting B.
So will there be some data from before this starts for these five settings? Oh,
yeah.
Okay, that's cool.
So we're at 12 minutes, I'm trying to figure out which direction to go in, because as I said, it's kind of complicated. But so basically the way this works is the physician provides the clinical information. Once this is up and running, they'll get the clinical information is linked to the guidelines that happens in the background, and then they have information about appropriateness, and then associated with the appropriateness, it might say, wrong choice, come back to go, don't order anything. It might say, order it next week if this and that happens. It may say, you know, CT is a bad idea, go to MRI, or it may say, CT without contrast is a bad idea, you're wasting this or that, or it may say, you're ruining the person's kidneys with, you know, the contrast, you can order this without the contrast. Those are different opportunities. And the guideline part all comes from this aggregate information of mostly ACR, but some other specialty societies who glued together their guidelines for purposes of this whole endeavor. They're all using the same guidelines. One other point I wanted to make, and I just very quickly said that, for example, one of the conveners is way 5 years ahead of the others in terms of the technology and their experiences with this kind of thing. Part of the statute is that when a convener signed up to do this or was, you know, applied and was selected, they agreed that there are certain bells and whistles to their DSS system that they would turn off so that things would be comparable. So there are certain components of DSS that are going to be comparable because of that, but there are certain components which will be contextualized for each of the five DSS systems. So this just quickly goes through ACR, American College of Cardiology, American Academy of Neurology, and the ENT organization for the sinus CTs are the ones that are predominantly involved. There's other organizations and specialty societies who were kind of consulted, but they weren't really, it wasn't really their game, so they weren't really, they didn't contribute that much. And I would say like 75 or 80% of the guidelines really tied to the ACR. The others are much less than. So I think I'm just going to skip this because I want to just get to a couple of other points. This just shows the clinical conditions associated with the ordering, the diagnoses associated with the ordering. And the guidelines were selected if they represented 1% of the diagnoses. If a guideline represented a diagnosis that was associated with at least 1% of the reasons for ordering a procedure, then that guideline was included. Okay, so now I wanted to get to the MID and the EMID goals. And if anyone has other questions afterwards, I'm happy to talk to people. So the MID is considered to be an educational opportunity for CMS and for physicians, and probably this evaluation will be, I guess, one of the bellwethers for evaluations of DSS systems. Doug probably can address that further. The test use of the goal is to test the use of DSS to help CMS understand whether DSS is helpful to physicians, whether it improves appropriateness, and whether it reduces unnecessary utilization, radiation, and contrast use. There's systematic data collection of DSS and claims during the demo, as well as primary data collection, because there's lots of contextual information that the office staff, the physicians, and the conveners can tell us. So we set our main data sources throughout this are Medicare claims, the DSS data, which is the appropriateness data, as well as the primary data collection that we'll get from surveys and focus groups. So these are the conveners. There's some kind of subsets of them listed here. And this shows the somewhat skewed geographic variation, but that's the way it is. I'm not sure why our colleagues in Los Angeles didn't get it. And this is just showing a little bit about the number of physicians in a practice. And this is, so there's 36 practices across these five conveners. Four of the practices have one or two physicians, not too many, but This is one has 3 to 5, 18 of the practices has 6 to 50 physicians, and 13 of the practices have at least 50. And of course, we're all aware that most practices in the United States have 1 or 2 docs. And this is the number of practitioners associated with the specialty types, at least as far as we know, and we're still trying to learn about the characteristics of these conveners and their practices.
Other positions, that's like anything that's not on there?
Anything that's not in another row.
Yeah.
So lots of cardiologists, lots of family practice, GIM are the key practitioners that are associated with this effort. And this just shows the number of practices defined by each of these conveners. These are the conveners. And the stage I'm at now, like what I spent 2 hours on this morning, is that each of these rows has a really different idea of what they mean by practice and site, as you can imagine. And so, you know, it's a complicated piece. I don't really believe that column called practice and what the numbers are, although that's how it's been advertised to me. But that's one of the pieces we're trying to figure out right now, is how do we have some comparable way of defining the boundary of a practice setting. But you see, pretty much we're talking about in the like 20,000 of these advanced imaging procedures per year for each of these conveners. So it's a lot of images that we'll be able to look at. So, and this is just saying that by statute that prior authorization was not allowed, and that physicians will be able to interact with their peers, get peer consultation about whether to order which test. They can order whatever test they want, and their reimbursement is not affected. And that's part of the way that the demo is designed. So this is the design, and somebody was asking about this. There's really 3 phases to the project, and right now we're inching up on the middle box. The first is the retrospective look at how images were ordered before anything happened. And then we were funded in late September, and it was intended that the demo would launch in January, but as of this morning, it's gonna launch August 1st. And launching means that the DSS will be up and running. And so right now, part of the reason that we were delayed is because as we work with each of the different conveners and their DSS systems, there's a lot of screwy things, as you can imagine. So they're trying to be, trying to get everybody to have some kind of homogeneity across their programs. And so, and again, that's not me, that's really Lewin's part. We're really the evaluation team, so we're the ones who kind of set up this part. So, when August 1st happens, what will happen is that the DSS system will be turned on in all of these settings. And when the DSS system is turned on, we don't know whether logging in, as Jonas was saying, to use the DSS system or appropriateness ratings is what might change behavior. And that's why we set up the design this way. So we start with 6 months where the physicians use the DSS system, but they don't have any access to the appropriateness data. The appropriateness data are run, it's in the background. We as the evaluation team will have access to the phase 1 pre-feedback information. But only after using the DSS system for 6 months do the docs get the appropriateness feedback that tells them change to contrast with or without, or change to this other kind of study, or don't order anything now, or whatever. So I think that's a key part of the design that I wanted to go
so
over.
It's starting in August when new residents come in July. It's coming in August, right? The first 6 months are going to be that big feedback, you know, how early residents tend to order. I mean, I saw some of those are some academic medical centers out there.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, I think that's a really good point. But on the other hand, I may be wrong in this, but when I think about that problem, I more think about it in the hospital-based setting.
Yeah.
And this is all ambulatory.
Okay.
It's still an issue, but compared to the other ones, I'm thinking.
Yeah.
I mean, like, for example, one of the reasons this was delayed is because there was an extra pot of money in Wisconsin, and they could only do the training for, you know, during this month, and Maine, everybody's at the beach in August, and so, you know, you can't start here. I mean, you know, there are real practical issues, and so.
We have no idea which of those 11, I mean, I know, understand that this is all before pre-event. We have no idea what the biggest, and the other studies that have been done, do we have any idea what tests, ADIs, are the biggest offenders of unnecessary imaging? Like, is it
people
unnecessarily order the non-contrast head CT for every headache? Or?
I think that the biggest increase by far was the cardiology studies.
Okay.
But with the appropriateness, you know, has really only been looked at in very small studies. Some of them show, I think I mentioned earlier, that a fifth of them are inappropriate. But another study that was recently done, just came out in the last month, shows that a very small number were inappropriate, like 3%, I think. That was in a pediatric setting, so I don't know.
And I mean, the other thing, too, which it doesn't sound like this is even, this in a way is setting in a pretty, the guidelines often, I think, have pretty broad criteria for what they consider appropriate, and it's not really, it's mostly based on consensus. They're not even really based on evidence for the most part. I mean, I know at least for the oncology guidelines, you know, it's basically, you know, the experts who sit around say you should get a CT every 3 months in this situation. There's no evidence for the most part usually that supports that recommendation.
So you're going to a really important point, and knowing me, you probably know that one of my main worries about this whole thing is, I mean, I'm always in these evaluations, you have to start somewhere.
Right.
And, you know, this is an extraordinary opportunity, I think, to evaluate lots of things. But my main nightmare in this whole thing is, you know, we do all of this stuff and then the guidelines are duds.
Exactly.
That's one piece.
And
the other related point that really makes me nervous is that the guidelines won't cover enough of the procedures. Now, they were selected, you know, the procedures were selected and the diagnoses were selected, the guidelines, so that they would cover lots of procedures. But, you know, I know from my first work I did when I came to Los Angeles was appropriateness, and there were lots and lots of procedures that just couldn't be assigned an appropriateness rating, even though, for those who know me and how I like to be detailed, that I had over 1,000 indications for, you know, a procedure, and we still couldn't cover, you know, a substantial number of procedures. And so those are my main worries. And one of the other reasons that we've been delayed is because, you know, I keep insisting that this and that be checked and that we really check to make sure that we're, the systems are working, the DSS systems are being implemented. We have some gold standard cases that are about to go through in the next month to see, even of these gold standard cases, whether they really get assigned appropriateness ratings the same way across each of them. And, you know, CMS originally thought that was a great way to test things, and I think so too, but only for one part of the reliability and validity assessments that have to be done. The other main points is how many of the, you know, cases are being captured by the guidelines. And so there's all kinds of other issues that we're looking at right now. So
I'd be worried also the physicians lie on the system.
Why would they
lie? Person's
not?
Got a, you know, they, you know, they're given some choices on their pull down list, and they just lie.
Yeah.
But
and,
here, there's no incentive to lie because they get the test no matter what.
So the thing is, they may lie, but I don't know whether
they're going to get feedback.
I don't know whether they would lie different. They may, but I don't know whether they lie differently here than anything else. My first research project I ever did was when I sent a medical student into a doctor's room to observe. Maybe I was cheating, I don't know, because I said it was to observe. They were really doing something else in addition to it. And they were actually coding how often breast exams were done. And then we looked in the medical record, and very often the breast exam was never done. The woman was never undressed, the breast never touched, and breast exam kept showing up.
Right.
So I don't know if this would be any different than anything else. And as I said, a really important piece of think of the design is that all these docs, their payment does not tie in any way to what they're ordering now. Although I worry that they may be thinking that whatever they're doing now will influence what happens years later.
Yeah.
Yes.
Are you going to ask them when they go? Follow their guidelines, why they didn't? Is that part of the evaluation? You know?
So we're still balancing out focus groups versus surveys, but that won't be at the imaging level unless we develop scenarios for our primary data collection. But in general, what happens is when the doc fills out the DSS for the intervention team group, they fill out the clinical information associated with determining appropriateness. And so that will be embedded within the DSS system. So in terms of our analysis, we can look at what was the pattern associated with various categories of appropriateness or not being able to be assigned a guideline. I'm not sure if that answers your question.
It's just if it was said that it's not appropriate and they go ahead and order it anyway, then they...
They have a comment. There's a comment field within DSS where they can say that.
Okay.
Yeah. So just very quickly, just one other thing I just wanted to say is, so we'll be looking at from here to here whether appropriateness changes. You know, of course, we don't know appropriateness here. But of course, to understand something about use, it would be great to have a control group, because the people, the practices that sign up will be really different. So we're busy trying to construct a control group. And in the control group, we won't have appropriateness ratings, but we will have the claims data, the Medicare claims data. So we'll be able to look at not only advanced diagnostic imaging, but other imaging trends, as well as other services. So, I mean, that's... I don't mean to keep this thing go over, but that's this kind of big picture. And maybe I should have known not to try to go over this.
That's great. Yeah. I mean, my concern would be that if it doesn't work, this is a very ambitious project, a conclusion will be DSS doesn't work. And, you know, you guys are going to have a huge amount of data to look at, but there's just so many different variables, and the implementation, there's so many implementation hurdles.
One cool thing is knowing, for example, that women and women's is in there. About that, because they really have the gamut.
Yeah.
Sophisticated. You couldn't get more sophisticated than their system.
No, I work with it. I'm getting on a call with those guys right now, 5 minutes late already. And I don't, they're probably working on this in particular, but even they, have implementation challenges.
Yeah.
So, and this is very ambitious. Yeah. But, right, I mean, hopefully we'll at least have one site.
And then the other issue is, I'm hoping the primary data from the docs, and I'm not sure about funding yet, because it wasn't in the proposal, but I'm hoping to get some funding to interview the radiology teams as well.
Mm. Interesting.
And to find out what their experience is.
That's cool. No, and this is very smart design, just collect the data and not get the feedback for the first 6 months.
So you'll have a lot more information from the surveys on the structure of how their stuff is all set up.
That's what I'm hoping. And ownership.
And there is ownership and
whether
incentives.
The machinery is on site and ownership. And, not that I'm deluding myself that I'm going to get great ownership data.
Right.
And in fact, just talking with Lewin this morning, we were thinking, I've been trying to push for ownership versus investment in, but I think that we're just going to go with a 0-1 ownership or not, because I don't trust they'll tell us for real, and so any ownership will be ownership. Something like that. I mean, there's just like a lot of pieces, but it seems
amazing.
Like an interesting
amazing
opportunity
study.
To learn a lot.
Huge.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
Nice. That's interesting.